This episode is brought to you by Harrah's Resort SoCal. Nestled against a rolling hillside and just down the road from Palomar Mountain, guests at Harrah's Resort SoCal can expect gorgeous views, friendly staff, available night and day to encourage everyone to have a great time. When I was there recently, I had a chance to dine at California's first and the nation's largest Hell's Kitchen. And it's true, the beef Wellington and sticky toffee dessert are great. The restaurant is inspired by the hit TV show and features a menu approved by the Michelin star celebrity chef, Gordon Ramsay himself. Hope to see you all at Harrah's Resort SoCal in 2024.
My name is Scott Lee. I'm an actor, a Vietnamese actor, Vietnamese American actor, Vietnamese parts, but made in America.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over the world. This is one of my first times I've interviewed in my studio in person. So this is a very cool kind of experience for me.
I'm glad it's me, man. I'm glad it's me. And we are in the 626. This is my hood. I grew up in the 626. I was driving around and just going to places that I grew up, you know, walking to. I saw like kids coming off San Gabriel High, and I was like, shit, that was me. Walking to, you know, go on mission and get some food and shit. So I love this place, man.
Yeah, well, welcome.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be Vietnamese to you?
Oh, man. It's a legacy. I feel honored, man. I mean, my parents came here. I spoke to them today, actually. 79 on a boat, you know, and all kinds of stuff happened. And I was born in the U.S., Houston, Texas, and boom, was born in Houston, Texas today. And, you know, it's just it's such a privilege to be they had courage to come do this. They had courage to get on that boat, leaving everything. And, you know, for me, living happily, living my dream is how I pay them back.
Yeah. Imagine if a war broke out right now and we had to, like, hop on a fucking boat and get across the Pacific and head down to Mexico or go somewhere. Can you just imagine fucking hundreds of thousands of fucking people trying to charter a boat out of here?
You know what's crazy? So, no, I can't. But then shit like that happens, and then we adjust. We're in shock, and we do it, and then we just adjust to it, right? My dad, and it made me think about today. I was like, damn, I'm just like him. My dad, when we were leaving Vietnam, I wasn't here, obviously. I wasn't born yet. But my three siblings, my mom and my dad, and my sister, she was 2 years old, a year and a half. I think she was two. And the grandmother was like, no, 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 leave her here. She's too young. And my dad was like, nah, man, if we're going to go and we're going to die, we're all going to die together. Wow. I'm not going to leave my daughter here and if I die. And I'm like that. I'm like that, dude, with my daughters, man. Like, wherever I go, I want them to be.
Yeah.
You know. Come on, you know what I mean? I'd rather be home. I hate leaving them, you know? So I kind of like connected that. And I was like, man, that was important.
Real quick, you shot a movie in Vietnam recently, right?
Yeah.
Did you take them with you?
No, I did not, because it was important. I felt like I just needed to focus on the job.
Yeah.
For this one. I was like, I playing the lead role, from the page one to the last page, and just, you know, training and all that stuff. I just wanted to be focused. And I knew if they were there, my mind would be kind of like sometimes drifting off. So I kind of, I told him, hey, next time. And we're going to be heading there soon with the family.
And we'll get into the movie and talk about it.
Yeah.
And you grew up in the SGV, which is in Southern California here.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Dude, San Gabriel, Alhambra, Pasadena, Rosemead, El Monte. That was my hood. You know what I mean? I went to San Gabriel High School. I was a wrestling team. I was on the wrestling team over there. I was on the basketball team over there. And, you know, just like it was, I think it was like the Sandlot days, man. It felt like it. You know the movie? Yeah. Felt like that, dude. We had a big fucking dog named Killer across that we were all scared of. German Shepherd. And
you killing me, Smalls.
I'm telling you. So it was, I think it was like a beautiful childhood, man. There was a bully. Of course there was a bully. Yeah. Motherfucker, like, you know, slammed my head against the wall. You know?
But you grew up predominantly around a lot of Asians in the SGV.
I did. But then, you know, me, I play with everybody. So I had mixed, you know, I had a black best friend, Bobby, and I had Robert, and I had Lynn, all these different, you know, ethnicities around me. So, but yeah, it was primarily Asian and Hispanic.
And as you were growing up and going through high school, what did you envision for your life? Like, what do you think you're going to be doing?
I wanted to be an MMA fighter, man. In high school, I realized that because I love fighting. I used to fight like crazy in elementary and then middle school. I would always get, you know, in trouble from fighting with my friends. And then I found wrestling and jiu-jitsu, and then I was like, shit, I'm going to do this. And then I switched right after high school. I got into law enforcement, and then I switched again. My girlfriend at the time was an actress. So I remember at that point, I did some all kinds of crazy jobs, man. At that point, I was a aviation mechanic and going to school for that too. And she was an actress from New York, and she came, and I was at her place, and then she brought in the mail, and there was like 15 stacks of, like 15 envelopes, and she'll rip them open, and they were all residuals. And they were like fucking 1,200, 1,500, 2,300, you know, 3,000. And I was getting paid like 18, 19, which I was like, yeah, pretty good. But I was looking at that, and she was always telling me, she was like, Scott, you could do this. You should get into acting, you know? She goes, you know, like, she was a French Latina chick, and she was like, Asian girls were like you, black girls were like you, white girls were like you. And I was like, oh, I don't know, babe. But I wanted to. I just didn't, like, say it out loud, you know? I just didn't say it out loud, but I wanted to. And then I think I took the leap, like, around that time, too. I was like, hey, babe, show me. And so I got headshots, and I went out, and I got a commercial agency. And then, like, the first 3 years, didn't book shit. Family was like, what are you doing? You know?
Let me stop you. So 3 years, you go out on auditions a few times a week.
Yeah.
Right? Why do you think you didn't land anything in those 3 years?
Man. Like, I think I was basting. I think I was just going there and assuming just, and trying to book it. Like, I think there's definitely, when you walk in a room, people can sense if you're desperate. And I was like, every time I didn't get an audition, I got more desperate. Damn, I gotta get to, damn. You know, I think that's what it was. I don't know. Maybe it's just, you gotta learn. You know, you gotta learn the ropes.
It's crazy that is your answer, because you didn't say, oh, it's because, you know, like the producers didn't think I was well-read or,
I don't know.
But that initial answer, and I'm gonna tell you why I think it's very interesting, because I was expecting a typical response in my mind would be like, yeah, I wasn't right for the part. Maybe I just didn't read enough, you know, or train enough to be an actor and, you know, the vibe. But I just finished Matthew McConaughey's memoir called Green Light. And it talks about this very fucking thing. He talks about this desperation. So he comes out to LA after like doing some small projects, some small roles that blew him up. Came out to LA, was crashing on a producer's couch, and the producer could sniff it. The producer was like, you are desperate. You need to get the fuck out of LA and go find yourself. And he talks about it. He goes and he leaves, and he looks for himself for like a month. I think he joins a monastery or some shit and like works all that shit out and then comes back. That desperation goes and it disappears, and he starts booking. So it ain't got nothing to do with anything other than the fact that if you roll into a place, any place of like work, and you come in with this sort of bearing of confidence, no desperation,
yeah,
people just kind of look at you way differently. I mean, it's like common sense, right? But we don't think about it.
Well, if you're not desperate, guess what? You're more natural and you're yourself. And that's what shines. That's what shines, right? I feel like that's where, like me as a, you know, actor, father, husband, just a person, I feel like, dude, I finally get to be me, man. I finally get to, like, I'm not trying to be a tough guy. I'm not trying to be, you know, impress this chick. I'm not trying to impress these people. I could care less. And I look at somebody and I find the wavelength right away. I'm like, hey, what's up? You know, and it's and I'm then I start pulling people in, like in a natural,
yeah, organic way,
organic, like way of just like, hey, man. And then we have a conversation and we become friends. And if it's acting, then of course you got to have your shit down though. You know what I mean? Like you have the meeting and you have the meet and greet between people, but you got to have that shit down. You got to have your dialogue down. You got to have whatever character you built, you know, put together, and little things that make it different, that makes it juicy, you know. I'm not going to give my secrets. There's some secrets that I do in audition tapes and stuff. But it's just that being you is the fucking shit.
3 years of doing that shit and you didn't get it? 3 years of auditioning.
Kept going.
How did you keep going? How did you keep the motor running when there was nothing coming in?
Most actors would know this. You get those auditions you go to and you leave feeling so good. It's like, fucking, man, this is why I did it. Fuck, I did it. I practiced it. I fucking rehearsed it. I went in there and I executed. Damn, I feel so good. And in that moment, you don't really care if you book. Of course you want to, but you're like, you walk out, boom. And then there's those times where you go, you leave the audition room and then you're driving and then you're thinking, oh shit, I could have done this. I could have done this. Oh man, I wanted to do this, but I didn't do it. Shit. Oh, then you think you could have done better, right? So it goes back to kind of like leaving that desperate, like not having that desperation mindset in life. And so now what? You go into the audition room, you do whatever you got to do, say whatever you got to say, that when you walk out, you're like, fuck. Well, done. You know, you're driving home, you think, you're listening to music, you're listening to some tapes or something, or you're not just chilling. You know what I mean? You don't have that, you don't go back and rewind that shit because I did it.
You give your best.
Yeah. And I made a choice and I had courage in my choices and I thought about something there and I did it naturally. Dude, better than not doing it.
I look out into the landscape right now and in the last, I don't know, 5 years, I keep questioning this. There's a few questions I always have, like why the fuck does Vietnamese food command the high prices? Another question I have is where the fuck is my Vietnamese lead man on the big screen? These are questions that float in my brain constantly. What do you think it takes to get an Asian male lead, like a Clooney or a George Clooney or Brad Pitt, on the screen from an actor's point of view? You're a great looking guy, you're in shape. What do you think when will that happen and how will it happen?
We've talked about, like, I've heard about that a lot. We've talked about it. But the thing is, I always feel like I'm that dude, man. You know what I mean? I'm like, and there's other dudes. I know so many fucking good looking, good actors and Asian that are out there. You know what I mean? It's there. It's just, you know, sometimes we got to build up to it. You know what I mean? We had, I think there's more and more people now. There's more and more Asian men now. So that's just a question I'm like, it's hard to say because I feel like they're there too. You know, we just got to wait for the, you know, right script. We got to wait for the right director. The right director is going to be like, oh, I need this Asian guy. There was a director I was working with. He said there was a film that he couldn't cast because they couldn't find the right Asian guy. So they went with a different race. You know what I mean? So he was like, I wish I knew you. And I was like, and it goes back to you and me. We fucking right here, you know? And we just never crossed. It's there. So, like, and that's why we were talking about, you know, before we started, you know, turn this on. I was like, you're doing some shit, man. You're putting voices, you're bringing people up, and you're good at it.
Oh, thank you.
You know what I'm saying? And so you play a huge part, and that's such an honor that you have. It's a fucking important thing, you know. So, like, second to no one, man. I mean,
thank you. Appreciate that. But we talk about that, right? Because, you know, we talk about men of my generation who are plagued with this never-ending, bottomless issue of self-esteem as it relates to being a Vietnamese American. Yeah. So that is a poison, or it's a blemish on our psyche that we're never good enough. And then it drives us, mm-hmm. our behavior mm-hmm. to try to like excel and not be second to anything. You know, and I think it's a good and a bad thing, right? Because you're constantly plagued with this like obsession to have your people, and that's my obsession now, it's to have the voices of our people and our generation all around the world amplified, you know? So it's one of those things where when I come across a man like you, I am so grateful, but I also question, when is it that this phenomenon of having this like George Clooney or Brad Pitt being one of us?
Oh shit, so should I plug in my movie now? Shit, that's April. Yeah, April 2023, A Tourist Guide to Love on Netflix.
Yes.
There we go.
And why don't we talk about it? I had other things that I wanted to bring up, but let's get it right into it.
I am playing the lead.
How did that come about?
I was working at a gym. I was the fitness manager at a gym. I was working there.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, man. I was loving that area, loving that gym. And people were like, dude, like, you bring the energy. And I'm like, dude, you guys bring the energy. And so I love that place. Then I got this audition for A Tourist Guide to Love, right? And took a break during like a lunch break and just kind of like shot the audition tape.
Shot it on a phone?
On a phone. You know, I drove home real quick. Had my wife kind of like, hey, I need 5 minutes. Read the lines, blah, 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 blah. By the time I got home, did it. My wife was like, damn, that was actually pretty good. And I was like, okay, sent it, went back to work. Then a month later, I think it was like a month later because it was a while. They were like, oh, they want you to read with the lead actress, Rachel Lee Cook. And I was like, oh, shit, cool, all right. And so they threw some more sides at me. I read those sides like 5 minutes before. And I took a walk around the gym because I was like, oh, shit, let me work on this. Boom, boom, boom. Then went into the office, did my read with her and the director and the casting director. And we were just like improvising as we were going. I was just like, dude. I was like, you know, boom, boom, boom. All kinds of stuff. Just we're going off script too at the same time, but we're still staying on it. And she was doing so many great shits. And then afterwards, I was like, that was cool. And then they were like, okay, cool. Well, that was great. Then a week later, the producer, Joel Rice, told my agent, hey, I need to talk to Scott. And at that point, they were kind of like, you know, I think Scott's the guy. The first line he said to me on Zoom was, he was like, do it for your kids. And I was about to cry. And I'll tell you why. Because during that read with Rachel at the end, I was asking her and Steven, I was like, how do you go travel and do stuff like this and leave your kids? You know, and so they were just giving me, you know, advice and saying what they were saying. And so he, the producer, sensed that I didn't want to go because of my kids, right? So when he said that, I was like, man, I balled up. I was crying. And then I was like, all right. And then I didn't even say yes yet, but I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And then so then I started training. I lost 50 pounds, got shredded.
Wait, did they approve you already at that point?
Yeah.
So you're in?
Yeah, I was like, I was in. So
contracts, you know, ink and...
Contract came out a little later, but I was already in. I mean, it was straight up like,
We want
perfect
you.
Timing, perfect people, perfect energy. And I told you before, I was like the wavelength, right? I'm into wavelength. I'm like, you, when you're around me, you feel, you know, this energy. And I sense good energy, and I pull that in. If I sense negative energy, I'm kind of turning away from that a little bit. I'm being, you know, respectful, but I'm going to turn away from it. I'm going to walk away from it. But, yeah. So then started training. Hired a trainer. I'm a trainer, but I hired a trainer. I started working with a nutritionist and asking a couple of friends of mine who compete on how they, you know, got shredded and all stuff. And I started doing that 50 pounds later. I was like, okay, this is how I see him. This is how I see that character. You know, he has to have these characteristics, right? So by the time I got on the plane, I was like, I can't remember when I got on the plane, but I was like, I need to be this weight. And that day I was that weight. So mission accomplished, right? And then so, and this is another crazy thing. I was on the airplane and I'm flying, right? I'm on the chair on the airplane, on that seat, and I'm doing sit-ups. And I'm doing crunches in the airplane. And I brought my resistant band.
Literally.
Yeah, I'm literally. I got my resistant band. I'm just fucking working out. And the flight attendants, they were walking by all giggling and shit. And I was like, I don't care. I'm just sweating, working out. Then working on my lines and then watching fucking some movies on the way to Vietnam to shoot it.
This is crazy because I don't know how many bigger roles you've had before. I mean, maybe smaller roles, but being opposite Rachel Lee Cook is a fucking big thing. And this is
right.
It
is.
Yeah, it's a Netflix project, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's crazy because typically studios want to see a bankable, you know, opposite lead, right? And just to bring in somebody who they don't know much about.
Yeah.
It's a big gamble, no?
It's a big gamble, but I think Rachel was like, and Joel and Steven, they were all like, we knew it was you. You know what I mean? And like, you're kind of unpredictable. You know what I mean? So there was a lot of elements that came together. And I think this is what you were talking about, like a Vietnamese or an Asian male lead in the big screen, blah, blah, blah. It's that time. We're living in that time. I almost felt like we were living it back then too, because I never make excuses. I never make a complaint. I've been auditioning since I started, dude, and I fucked up so many times. And it's not because it wasn't for an Asian, you know, role. And it's because I fucked up, you know. And I gotten better. Then I made the adjustment, the mental psychological adjustment, where it's like, hey, just be you. Just be you, and when you walk in that room, the energy, the confidence, and just, you know, your existence walks in, man. All the shit that you carried before, all the joy, you know, family and friends, that comes into the room too. And so if you're you, you carry all that shit, people sense it. I mean, we got some shit. We got some energy, man. And I was in a room full of people recently, right? And I could tell who was negative. And then I actually went, I walked over there and I said something nicely to them. Like, oh, okay, confirmed. And I walked away, you know? So
that's some West Coast, like, artist ability to kind of feel things, right? Because I feel like...
Feel the room, read the room.
You read the room, you feel people, but... It's very kind of like there's no language for it. There's no system where you can, it's just like this internal thing where, you know, you're kind of like living on the fringes of kind of human sort of feelings, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, without that, how do you do your job as an actor or an artist or a creative? You know, it's things that are completely kind of like indescribable. This ability to kind of feel people and kind of like get into the psyche of, because typically we're just, you know, especially I think Vietnamese traditional jobs, we're, you know, kind of mechanical. We go in and we do doctor jobs, we do, you know, engineering jobs, we do you know, but this whole sort of like this feeling stuff, it's like you don't, it's not really talked about much.
Yeah. Might be because of my wrestling, my jiu-jitsu days. Might be because of my my yoga days. You know what I mean? And you got to feel. You got to. There's so much, like you're feeling your opponent out. You know what I mean? And you're training. You're training with your team. And then it's at the end, it's all about you. So I think that's pretty much kind of like how I approach auditions and how I approach my acting. It's just like, man, hey, first you got to be you. You got to make sure that the things that you say and the things that you do, you'll be happy when you walk out the door. And that's enough, dude. Don't have to fucking try so hard.
No, but I imagine though, as an actor though, it's sort of like as a singer, right? Our voice, our mannerisms are tools. How do you know that you're going to go into a room and you can deliver the memory, you can deliver the lines, you can deliver everything, the notes, the feeling? How do you know that that is something that you can be able to deliver when you get there?
So the way I kind of like try to organize it is first know the lines. Read the lines until it becomes like just like walking forward, you know, and then I make a left, then I make a right, then I make a left to go home. So now you know it. Then you have, for me, it's like find something that you could pull from your history, your past, that you could kind of like really have an emotion connected to it. And then when you're there, you just, it's like putting on armor, you know, putting on or putting your gun together. You do it so often that you could do it anywhere. And then just execute. I mean, listen to the person that's across from you and feel what they're saying and connect to them.
But there's like 100 pages in an average script. You got to remember all that. And
I do. Wow. And I do not, because what I do is what it's like is basically, yeah, of course you got to know the script, but just work on what you need to do that day. Like, you're not going to do the entire script that day. You're not going to do 10, 20 pages that day. You're probably going to do 5 pages or 6 pages. Just focus on that. Focus on that. Focus on that. Don't overthink. Don't think about, oh, what's happening. Just focus on, because by then you've already done so much work. You've read it so many times. So just focus on what you need to do that day. And you should be good. You should.
Was that time you went to Vietnam with Rachel Lee Cook in this production the first time you've been to Vietnam?
That's right. Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I haven't cried so much in the last 2 years, man. Damn. When I landed, when I was on a plane, I landed on that soil. I was like, shit. I felt that soil. I was like my roots. And I was like, the energy, I could feel the energy. I was like, damn, I'm here. And my sister, I have a sister that was born in Vietnam that passed away. And I was like, I'm here. You know, I'm here. I'm here. You know, you're not alone. And so I used, that was kind of like a big part for me, kind of like to, a big reason why I wanted to go there too. You know, I mean, go back to this place where my parents left. So they left in 75 on a boat. You know, for freedom, for all these things, right? And, you know, they have a family, they raised me up, and here I am, full circle, coming back on an airplane, doing a project, representing Vietnam, representing our family, and, you know, just like,
did you,
blessing, man.
Did you know anybody in Vietnam?
I think a few people, like, no, not family members.
Yeah, just
like
just industry like, people or?
There's some industry people that went in and out. I was like kind of doing some stuff here and then went back home to Vietnam, but not really. Yeah. So it was cool. I was like, dude, I was on game mode. It was like fight ready, dude. I trained mentally and physically like it was a fight. Like I said, I told you, I wanted to be an MMA fighter back in the days, yeah. Right? So I was like, I approached this like a fight. I had a team. I had trained for it, mentally trained for it, physically trained for it. And then here, I'm flying over there for the match, man.
Okay, can I ask you a question? I don't know if if you signed an NDA or you can't talk about it, but I want to know one thing. Mm. Are you Rachel Lee Cook's love interest?
Yes.
How much physical action gets get to see? Can you talk about that?
Dude, when is this coming out? Because I think
I'll put it out today.
Oh, you're gonna put this out today? Shit. It's a romantic adventure, beautiful shot movie. I mean, it's the best of Vietnam, dude. We shot all over Vietnam and beautiful, fucking awesome cast. They were all so talented. They were so good, man. Actually, I was like, oh damn. They surrounded me around a bunch of black belts, dude, and I was like, oh damn. But you know, all of them kind of like helped bring me up too. You know what I mean? Because you're around them, you know. And of course, Rachel was, she's like, I almost want to say like a mentor to me now. Because I watch her on set. I see the way she works. And it's just like, man, this is a beautiful thing. It's just so natural. Such a nice person. And you want to, and wavelength, man. Wavelength, dude. Her wavelength is fucking there. So I was like, okay, boom, I'm here. You know? But yeah. There's some smooching involved for sure.
And I asked that because it all goes back to that lead man shit that I always question.
Yes.
I'm like,
okay, then hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because somebody took a gamble on this, right? Cause we don't see that shit. Like even in Simu Liu and Awkwafina, whatever, you see this shit on like a big Marvel picture. That's my big question. Like, why don't we see smooching? Why don't we see like action on screen, like between man and woman, between an Asian dude? I mean, Henry Golding and fucking Crazy Rich Asians. I mean, when have we seen just straight up? I mean, I'm sure they exist, but I want to see more of that, right?
Yeah.
And I don't care if it's with a white woman, black woman, Asian woman. I want to see more of it. And in fact, with the Marvel film like Simu and Awkwafina, why did they fucking make them friends? You know what I mean? Why can't they fucking be two people who are just like physically attracted to each other? Fuck the like the comedic shit that Awkwafina had to pull. And then, you know, why can't it be like some hot love sparks between these two characters, right? And that's why like, I'm looking for that from now on. Like,
did they have it? I mean, whether it was written in the script or not, but no. like, did they have, like, I'm talking about like, this is info, but like, I think I was the only dude that I know that didn't have a crush on Rachel Lee Cook. I think back, well, you know, she's all that stuff. I was like, oh, she's cute. But I didn't have a crush on her. Like my brother-in-law had a, he was like, dude, I had a crush on her so bad. My brother had a crush on her so bad. And I was like, oh shit. And here I am doing a movie with her. And then as I'm around her, I'm taking her in, and I start to have a bit of a crush on her, right? But I keep that shit inside because I'm using that. Ah, shit, yes, because she's, well, obviously she's beautiful, but like, man, she's just
gracious,
so light, so, yes.
I can hear it. There's like this grace about her.
Yeah,
there's this kind of understanding, man, about her.
Smart, professional, friendly. And then I'm like, that's what I like. You know what I mean? It's like people who have it, but, you know, they're themselves.
And she's already arrived.
Yeah. And she's herself. And she's just so nice. And so I was like, oh, okay. And I was, oh, shit, I'm going to use this. I started having a crush on her. And anyway, hopefully it worked.
God damn, I can't. I can't wait till it comes out.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Dude, yeah.
What are some of the highlights of what is it, 30 days that you shot, or?
Oh, I think it was like 3.5 to 4 months.
Holy
shit. Yeah. That's why I hesitated to go to Vietnam because and leave my kids, man. I'm so attached to my kids. I'm like, when I talk about my kids, I'll start crying. I'm serious, dude. Like, I'll start crying right now if we start talking about kids and shit.
But we should talk about kids.
Yeah.
We'll get to that because.
But that's why they were like, do for your kids. Like Joe was like, do for your kids. And you know.
But what the fuck is it? How is it 3 or 4 months? It's like a.
Man, it was.
Was a rom-com or?
Kind of, but it was also an adventure. It was romance. Yeah, you know, because it's there, but it's kind of different, man. You know? And me being I would say this was my biggest role ever. And if I did this like 10 years ago, I think I would have been like fucking all over the place.
Not ready.
Not ready, all over the place. But now I was like, again, I wasn't desperate. I wanted to stay. I was like, okay. And then so many things kind of like started to think, man, this is, you know, real quick, like somebody told me, oh, yeah, what an opportunity of a lifetime, right? They said that to me, right? And I squinted my eyes, just like what you're doing right now. And I was like, yeah, I just kind of nodded my head a little bit. And then the next day I was driving and those words, I do a lot of driving early in the morning, like at 4 a.m. I'm heading to the gym, right? So I'm like, I think I got it. Like that person said, what an opportunity of a lifetime. But to me, I don't see it that way. Like my life is an opportunity of a lifetime.
Mm.
So it's a part. Oh. It's not like, damn, what an opportunity. No, it's just a part. Like my life, I'm living. I have a life, dude.
It's an opportunity of this. Yeah.
My life.
This entire thing, it's an opportunity.
Life is an opportunity of a lifetime. If you know that, you're not going to give a shit. You're going to walk up to that girl and be like, hey, you're going to go to your boss and be like, I want that fucking $10 raise and I deserve it because blah, 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 blah. You're going to go take that travel, that buy that ticket to fucking, you know, whatever. And then you're going to quit your job because you know it's fucking, it stinks. And you're going to take this other thing because you know you're going to be happier. You're going to do it. It's opportunity of a lifetime. Life is an opportunity of a lifetime. So, yeah, dude. So the four, I think it was like 4 months, man. Something like that. It was weird. That morning leaving, I was like, oh shit. But I was preparing myself like 2-3 months in advance already. So
God damn, this is so interesting because a lot of the people that I talk to on this podcast have been to Vietnam, yeah. Right? Whether they're 19 or they're fucking 15 or, you know, 80, most people have spent some time, at least one trip in Vietnam.
True, right?
Or if they have not gone, they were planning to go, and then there's like this sort of agenda. You did not have an agenda at all. It just like came up, and you take this trip back to Vietnam to make a movie. To make a fucking movie. Like how, what better way to return? Or you didn't even return. This is the first time you've been back. Or this is the first time you've been to Vietnam.
First time.
And did your like wife or kids ever come out to visit?
No. I had to stay focused on what I was doing, they would have been a distraction.
Yeah, for sure. So, for sure.
I mean, we FaceTime every night, I mean, there's so many things to look forward to because we are planning trips to Vietnam, you know, and other places. So they're not gonna miss out. They're kind of jealous. She was jealous that I was going and all that stuff. And I was like, she's a traveler. I'm not, you know what I mean? I like to kind of like, you know, but now I'm starting to like, you know, going to these places too. So again, life is an opportunity, right? So I want to take a look at all these places.
How has this experience changed you?
You know what it has done? It has, look, I don't even realize I did it. It feels weird, man. I mean, like, I saw some, I went and did some ADR, which is like, you know, you kind of do voice and stuff to kind of like clear up some areas. But it's weird because it's coming out and I feel the same. I feel the same as I did like last year when I was training at the gym and I had all these clients and, you know, the family. I was like, like I was the same dude. Like, but if anything, I feel like, hey, you know what? Now, the way you were thinking and the way you were feeling about things and how to approach life and the way you live your life, that was a good choice to start making those adjustments. When I say make adjustments, I was like, okay, positive people only. Don't argue over fucking petty shit. People who are negative and are, you know, don't want to talk, don't talk to them. Work out. Eat right. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I smoke weed once every like 2 or 3 weeks at night, right before I sleep for my joint pain. Eat right and just be yourself. And so, how's it changed?
Are you career wise? Are you getting more offers as a result of this experience, or it's just
you? Yeah. I think so. I came back. Oh, check it out. So when I was there, I told myself, okay, I think I told myself by the end of the year, you need to book two more jobs. And then I got back and I started auditioning. And lo and behold, end of the year, I booked two jobs. And I booked FBI's Most Wanted for CBS. And then right now I'm doing HBO thing, two jobs. So visualizing it, kind of like, I didn't say 10 shit. I didn't say 10, you know. I said two. I could feel it. I could feel myself doing it. And I remember for the FBI's Most Wanted episode, the writer is a good friend now. But she, when I read it, the first time I read it, I've been fucking crying so much. I don't know why, dude. Wow. I read it because it was about the refugees, you know what I mean? And the pirates and all that stuff. So I read it and I started crying. And my wife walked in and I looked over to her and I was like, hey, I'm going to book this. And then she just ignored me, right? So I was like, hey, I'm going to shoot this in New York. And then I didn't even think about it. I booked it. And I'm at the airport heading to New York. To New York, and I text her, and I was like, what did I say?
Right? It's like that Jim Carrey writing a $10 million check to himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I go, once I'm in New York, I realize something else. I'm in New York shooting this crime show. And back when I was in high school, younger, my sister and I would watch like Cold Case, SVU. You know, those shows that shot in New York. And I remember I was like, one day I'm going to be over there in New York shooting an episode. I was like 12 or like 15 or something like that, dude. And then later, I remember when I was there, I was in like Greenpoint. I was like, shit, dude, here I am. I was like, good job, kid, for fucking saying that and believing it. You know what I mean? Not being like, I want to shoot it, but no, this might not happen. No.
You know,
fucking make it happen.
This lead man role, like I'm imagining in my mind that if I had sort of like this thin resume or acting resume or not as much screen time traditionally on the screen, I would go, this is me fucked up thinking, right? Like I would go into a contract negotiation thinking like a fucking like cowering, like, oh my god, like I'm just happy to be here, I'm not gonna negotiate. Did you have that problem, or did you go, no, you tell your agent like, this is fucking what I want? Can you talk about that? Or
kind of so they it was like a certain amount that they put out.
Yeah.
I was like, I literally said nah. I told my agent, I was like, no, I want more. And then I think they made an adjustment, and then I said, nah, I want more. And then both my team at that time, they were like, you know, maybe we should just, you know, do this. And I was like, in my mind, because again, I was riding on that wavelength, man. Yeah, wow. I'm like, no, dude, I'm going to leave my family fucking 4 months. I'm going to leave this job. They said that you can have your job when you come back, right? But I'm leaving it, and probably I might not come back because they might give it to somebody else. Who knows, right? So I was like, no, I want more. And then they were like, and I was like, okay, you know, so, you know, I did it, but I was like, I wanted more, and I deserved more, you know?
Yeah, and I asked you because I'm sure that a lot of our new Asian American men who are going into that sort of like that contract negotiation is having to think about these things because it's like, wait, the white American studios are giving us a shot. The system is giving us a chance. We just take fucking whatever we can. Yeah. But that is like contradictory to
the way I think.
The way we should be thinking, right?
I if the number sounds good to me, I like it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not, you know, I mean, I always, you know, and who I, the people I have right now, I'm really happy with because they're sharp. You know, the manager I have right now is a shark, and I really appreciate him. He's a friend of mine now too. We're close. And I'm learning from him. He's a mentor too, you know, not just my manager, but a mentor and teaching me about things. But I see his work, and it's along the same wavelength that I'm practicing, that I am, you know. And so we gravitate towards each other, and so young. You say young actors in here and there. It's like, you know, ask for more. Ask for more. If you ask for more, the worst is like a no, or you know, they're not gonna be like, oh
We're going to cut you out of the project. We're going to find somebody else.
We went a different route. Well, if it's that case, then it's probably a small project or like a weaker project. It's not a big project.
Where they're going to need this specific DNA.
And if that's the case, you don't want to be with them. You know, but if it's a big project like Netflix or, you know, HBO, whatever, they're going to be like, they're going to negotiate and then they're going to put, you know, back and forth. And then they're going to put a number out and then they're going to leave it into your rep's hands. They're not going to like just disappear. You know what I mean? They're not going to, at least I don't think they're going to. Yeah, it doesn't feel like, but yeah, you know,
some back and forth.
And you got to be confident with that shit. You got to be like, you know what? Back and forth, and then boom. Okay, here, this is the best we could do, and then it's in your court. You make the decision, versus kind of being afraid to ask for more. Like, no, man, I ask for more.
What kind of films are you into?
Oh man, war films. Like war film. Like my favorite film is Braveheart. Braveheart.
Man. That's a good film.
Braveheart.
It's a fucking badass.
I watched it like 6 times. Dude.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it about Braveheart that turns your heart on? Your mind on?
It doesn't give me a heart on. But check it out though. Like first it's Mel Gibson, right? And he wrote and directed and acted.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, this guy who through war and stuff, he starts to build. And he's a leader. He's himself, and people gravitate towards him because he's a natural leader. Like all the guys around him, they gravitate towards him because he's a natural leader. And then they go into battle and all that stuff. And then he gets betrayed by one of the guys, and that's the only thing that where he sat down. He kind of gave up. He gave his body up right there. So it's like epic battles, man. Like Lord of the Ring, epic battles. Like men just going at it. You know, and I love that, and then I met him once. I was at an audition in Santa Monica, and we were at some sort of a grocery store, and I was walking through the aisle, and I saw him. He saw me, and then we walked in, and we did it again. And I walked up to him. I was like, "Hey, man, what's up, man?" And he's like, "Hey, what's up?" We shook hands, and I was like, "Hey, man, you're one of the reasons why I started acting." Right? He goes, "Hey, don't act too much." Right, and I tell people this story, and sometimes they're like, "What a," and I was like, "No, okay."
That makes sense.
Yeah, man. Like, think about it. Don't act too much, and that's almost like the way I approach my life. Yeah. Like, I don't act, man. I am. I'm myself, and I'm doing it, and I'm enjoying it while I'm doing it. Versus kind of like not enjoying it. You know, I'm just, you know, it's a blessing to actually be doing this. What we're doing, man. Fucking. Getting a bunch of creative minds together and like creating something like this and then shooting it. And in the future, people are fucking going to watch it.
It's amazing.
The future, going to sit down and look at this box and see us doing this.
I take it even a step further, which is if I get to see you making out with Rachel Lee Cook, right? And I get to have that sort of understanding as a community, right? Yeah. All Asian Americans in this community. That is like the start or the early days of like the wave turning. It's like, it's turning. Yeah. It's like, because this is a big gamble and it may or may not work, but somebody gave it a shot. The powers that be gave it a shot. So this is like, for me, it's in the early days of this historical time.
Yeah. A gamble.
You don't like that word.
I don't think it's a gamble.
Fight me.
You know what I mean? I think that it's just finding the right people that feels right. And I feel like, you see, I'm in a process of, my mindset now is like, I have a script that I wrote with my buddy who I shot a film with in South Africa many years ago, Gary Kai Mutumbera. I call him GK. If you see him, ever hear see him, call him Gary, okay? He hates it.
He hates GK?
He hates the word Gary. I just fuck with him. But anyways, we wrote like 3 scripts together. But one of these scripts that we wrote like 7 years ago, it's coming back. And so we're putting it together. We're packaging it. And in my mind, just like when I was in Vietnam, I said I'm going to book 2 things by the end of the year. And I knew it was going to happen. I believed it. I'm telling myself, and I see this project called Female, which is about an MMA, a female MMA fighter, trying to get this former MMA fighter, a prodigy, who kind of gave up on it. She's trying to get him to coach her because he has knowledge that she needs to be the best. And of course, there's a romance, you know, thing that happens too. But I'm seeing that project being made in 2025, and I see it happening. And then when I cast the character, the fighter, it's not a gamble. It's not going to be a gamble. Lauren, the female character, the lead, when I cast, it's not a gamble. When I see her, it doesn't have to be a name. When I see her and I'm reading with her and she's there, it's not a gamble. So going back to what we were talking about with, you know, A Tourist Guide to Love, I don't see myself as a gamble. You know?
Oh, so interesting, so, man. What ethnicity do you see? What, Lauren?
Oh,
who,
man,
is she? What describe her?
She's a ethnicity wise. I mean, I try to leave that out because the right person that's going to read it,
you'll know.
I'll know. I don't want to narrow it down in being like, oh, she's this ethnicity or this ethnicity. I think in the beginning, the first draft, there was Jin is this ethnicity, you know. But then I'm playing that character, and then Miles is this ethnicity because he's black. So my best friend is black, and he's gonna be playing Miles. So okay, so that's fine. We cut that out too. But then Lauren is this, and we used all different type of like ethnicities, right? But like we've been working on it the last month. We took all that out because the right person is gonna be the right person,
and that won't be a gamble,
and it won't narrow it down to be. It has to be this, you know? And that's why I feel like, man, I'm looking at Bruce Lee right there. Shit.
Have you watched that?
Be Water, my friend. Yeah. No.
That's the...
I think so. It's
a documentary.
Yeah. Okay, no. Yeah. And I haven't then.
It came out in 2020. It went to Sundance.
Man, there's a lot of things I haven't watched. A couple years, like 5 years ago, I disconnected from TV, film, social media, everything, dude. I was like, nope, off the grid. I was just like family, work, train people, train myself, focus on myself. And then, during the Netflix thing, they had me open up an Instagram again.
You have to, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, you know, you go on Instagram, start looking at all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah, it leads you down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, and then like, you know, from girls doing squats and sticking their butt in people's faces and shit. And I'm like, oh, shit. And then, but there's good stuff, though. There's like National Geographic. I love watching animals fight, dude. I'm watching animals fight. And like wildlife, because it's beautiful, dude. It's beautiful. I love lions, man. I'm a Leo. So someone told me you look like a lion. I grew up my beard and shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I took it a step further, man. This is like all through my training for A Tourist Guide to Love. And I think I might have even done it before. As I was training in Arcadia, and from my when I parked the car and I'm walking to the front door, this is the beautiful mountains, right? And whether it was 4 a.m., 5 a.m., 6 a.m., when the sun came up, 9 a.m., whatever it is, I would always look at the mountains and I'm walking and I'll be roaring like a lion.
Oh shit. Like literally.
Yeah. Just like. And sometimes they'll be like, you know, missing. But it also does something to my body. Like I'm like a lion roaring his territory. That's just my fucking territory, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a fucking lion. And, you know, I'm here to work. You know, so that just got me like started. You know, and then go in there and do the work. You know, and they train like crazy. Did I mention I lost 50 pounds for the movie?
Yeah.
I did. So some of the things that I use for training, I mean, even the people that were at the gym who knew me, they were like, man, something happened. Like you just flipped a switch. And
After you got the green light.
After I got the green light, I turned it up even more.
Okay. But before that?
Before that, I was already doing it.
This is when people started noticing, and then you got the
shit
the
was
part.
Already happening, because so that's the thing though. I'm like,
damn.
I feel like, hey, you know what? Wavelength. My wavelength was high. So whether my audition tape or whether when they're FaceTiming me, people sense wavelengths, man. I mean, and then they want to match theirs. You know what I mean?
This idea of manifesting like on a real level, on a real organic level is an important thing.
To me, for sure.
For everybody.
I think for everybody. But you got to look into it.
But we don't do it. We don't do it enough. Normal people. I don't do it enough. People don't do it enough.
Yeah.
You know, we don't.
Yeah.
It's just not part of our inherent cultural sort of value system, you know? Yeah. We want to count beans. We want to fucking like account for shit. We want to do things that are numerical and, you know, like, I'm not, you know, obviously I'm not trying to generalize Asian people, but we're not, that's not in our kind of cultural purview. It's becoming that now. Mm. I think it's starting to be more out there. Maybe this is what it takes as more actors are showing up in the scene.
Yeah.
You're really one of the first, I've had female actors on. Yeah. I've had female writers on.
Yeah.
But there's no Asian act. I mean, there's more guys coming out of Sympathizer, but there's no Asian American, Vietnamese American actors that there's not a lot of them.
Yeah.
But this visualization process is such a critical part of becoming somebody who you see, who we consume on screen.
Yeah. I think one, you got to have a lot of courage, and then you got to have a lot of grit, like a lot of rejection. But if you see the rejection as, hey, you know, like I'm learning from that, you know, like I can't make mistakes. If you take mistakes and you go, shit, okay. That was a learning lesson. I got submitted by that motherfucker 7 times. I didn't fuck up. I'm learning. So that'll probably help, you know, kind of like start changing things. You can't make a mistake. You can't fucking make a mistake unless, you know, I can't make a mistake. I could do shit and then, oh, okay, make adjustments. Like on set, on one of the days I was shooting in Vietnam for the movie, Tourist Guide to Love, I was standing there and a group of people walked by and I would say something and give them something, and another group walked by because I'm a tour guide, right? And we're at a hotel, and then another group walked by and I'll be like, hey, and I'll say something and give them. And then another group, like 3-4 groups, I'll say something, and then Rachel walks up, right? Amanda, her character, and I say something to her, but with her it was like, you know, a little bit more dialogue, right? I fucked up. I was like, oh man, I keep on like messing up the words. 7-8 takes later, I was like, oh shit. I started getting angry with myself. I kept it in though. I was like, come on. And then our producer, Joel Rice, he was like, hold on. He called me over. We sat in the corner and he was like, hey, take a breath. Read with me. So I read the scene with him. Da, 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 da. Okay, he's ready. I walk back out there. We do it. Bang. Got one out. Boom. And then I messed up again. Shit. And then later I do it again. Oh, got one out. Rachel was always so cool. She came up to me. She was like, hey, we just need one. And even that, we're going to cut it and edit it. No big deal. You know what I mean? So it's no mistakes, man. That was a learning. And at the end of the day, I went back to my place and I was like, damn, that was a learning lesson right there, man. Being on set, 200 people looking at you and shit, and then you're doing that.
You choke.
Oh shit! And it's like, but then the support from our director Steven, the support from Joel, Rachel, you know, the other cast members, man, they were like, I was like, man, I'm good. You know what I mean? Next day, boom, long scene, got it all done. Boom, the next day, you know, choked up a couple times too. You know, it happens, dude. It happens. So just, you know, and that's where you, when you have a good team, you care about each other, you work well with each other, you're not going to judge each other. You're going to have she could have been like, but you know, hey, Scott, just we need one. That's honest. You know what I mean? So so many lessons right there, man. I mean, it was the biggest project I've ever been a part of. And like man, I cherish those people and the memories and the relationships that I got out of that.
You know, when Jenny Chang Lei introduced us recently and I met you, I got this instant gravitational pull. Like
the wavelength, bro, I'm talking about. I'm pulling people in.
It's like the charisma, the warmness that you come to the table with, you know, you're just on my, and then the follow through, follow up. I was like, whoa, this motherfucker is like.
I said I was gonna ball you up because I'll say you
on it. I was like, what the fuck? I don't know you. You don't know me. And it's like just that chemistry. I'm like, there's an awareness to you. You know, there's a certain level of awareness that now I'm beginning to understand. I'm really beginning, but I want to ask you. Were there challenges specifically growing up in your life that kind of gave you this sort of depth?
Oh, for sure, man. Shit, I had a learning disability, a serious one.
Okay, let's talk about that.
I know,
that.
Right? Yeah. Like,
what was the learning disability?
Man, ADHD. I think I was in the fourth grade, I think. They yanked me out of class for like a week, 2 weeks, I think. A week or 2 weeks. And I was given all these tests, right? And I remember, like, the man that did it was this, like, really nice, gentle, big, giant man. You know, he was, I can't remember the test exactly. I remember, like, it was, like, some pictures and then write this, write that, and then say, what do you see? And all, it was, like, a bunch of stuff. And then, like, after we were all done with the test, like, a week, 2 weeks into it, he met up with my mom, which she didn't speak English, you know? So my sister Lily was there and I was there and he turned over, he told my mom, he's like, hey, you know, Scott has a learning disability, ADHD. And so, can you translate that over to her? And I remember specifically, and my sister, you know, we have the exact same memory of this. She looked over to my mom and said, "Can you love doing
wait,
like,
what?"
She said, "Can you love doing sang?" Like they call me Sang, right? Right. Which is kind of like the same name in A Tourist Guide to Love, Sin. But she said, something's wrong with Scott. She didn't understand. She just looked at my mom and said, something's wrong with Scott. And because she didn't know what ADHD was. Yeah. My sister was like 2 years older than me, dude. So, and then I'm glad like they didn't pop pills. I didn't pop pills and shit. You know what I mean? I just kind of like just had all this energy. I couldn't focus on one thing. You know what I mean? I was like all over the place, you know? And I realize that's why I was so good at sports, man. I was captain of the basketball team. I played basketball all the time. Then I was captain of the wrestling team. I got thrown off the basketball team because I was too rough. I was like, and I was the captain. I was like, what? I remember we were doing a three-man weave and shit, and I could see guys like kind of like chilling and jogging. I would run up them, and I would grab them by the jersey and throw them to the ground. Like, come on, let's go. We got to do this. We got to do this together. And I think a couple of weeks or a month, the coach, damn, Coach Henningsen, he was like, the team can't take your abuse. Well, you have to, you know, you're no longer a part of the team. And I just remember, I was like, what? I'm giving it all I got. That's why I'm doing it. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing, right? And I think that's all related to my ADHD too, because I'm just so like
high energy.
Yeah, high energy, fucking amped, dude. And then joined wrestling. And my coach and mentor as a kid, I didn't even know, but he was fucking one of the best parts of my life, Larry Landless, right here in San Gabriel, right? Started wrestling, captain of the wrestling team. Then he started teaching me jiu-jitsu and all that stuff too. I just honed in and then just calmed down and lost a ton of weight, you know, and learned how to work with different people because we had three girls. We had a guy that was 120. We had a guy that was like 220. So you have to approach them and train and work with them differently. You know what I mean? But I still sucked in class. You know, during reading and shit, I would like try to skip ahead and try to get to where I'm at. Oh, okay, try to get those. So reading was an issue for me. So I remember then later on, I think right after high school or like a little bit after high school. I was like, shit, I want to be an actor, right? I got to get better at reading, right? So I asked my sister, she's a teacher. I remember knocking on the door. She was in the bathroom. Bang. Like, hey, teach me how to read. Because my reading was really bad. I was like, teach me how to read. And she goes, okay. I was like, okay, what? Go get a book. Get a book and read. That's all you need to do. Start practicing. I was like, oh, okay. So I grabbed the book and I started reading. And I think that summer I read, like, I never read a book until, like, all through high school, dude. I never read a book. Unless, you know, it's in class and we read here and there. I think when I was in third grade, we read this little book, Rabbit in the Middle and shit. And it was read as a class. I was like, oh, that's my one book. But then that after that day, that summer when I knocked on the door and my sister Lily was like, just get a book and start reading. That's how you get better at it. I read like 13, 14 books. I read all the Lord of the Rings. I did all that stuff, man. And so I got better. I started getting better at that. So that to me was, and then of course I was feeling a little bit like, okay, I got to be careful, you know, slow down a little bit. You know what I mean? Because my ADHD is going to be like all this energy, right? So when I read scripts, table reads, you know, just slow down a little bit, you know, enjoy the moment, read it. So that I would say that is one challenging thing, because there is a part of me that goes kind of insecure, but not anymore. Not anymore. In like the last 3-4 years, I'm telling you, I am who I am. I do what I want. And I only put the people that I want around me. And I'm on a different wavelength, man. And I pull people in. And it's just be you, man. If I'm a high strung, or if I speak too fast, that's me. That's fine, you know. And if I need to, I'll slow it down. I'll make the adjustment for a project or whatever, you know.
Can I ask you, when did you lose your sister?
Oh, I had one sister that I never met. So I am one of five. I have older sister. She's and they're all here in America. They came on the boat. Older sister, and then a brother. Then I had another sister that was born in Vietnam. That she didn't make it because, you know, in Vietnam it's you know, you get sick at an early age. It's tough.
Yeah.
You know, here it's already tough. If you have a 1-year-old and he or she is sick, that's scary shit, man.
It is. It's fucking frightening. Fucking
scary, man. But in Vietnam, it's a whole nother thing. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. So you didn't really go through the trauma of losing a sister at an age. Okay. Yeah.
No. And then I had a... Then there's another sister, and then I was born here in America.
Oh, so you're the youngest of four.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, you know, we talk about having children, and, you know, do you really care about what they get into in terms of, like, careers or future? Mm. Do you really think about that stuff now that you've sort of, like, gone through life living with sort of like a basic direction, but it sounds like it's sort of been very malleable and very flexible. And it's not like you had a grand plan to get to anywhere, right?
Yeah.
You just sort of like live your life as an artist, and you've done a bunch of things. And then all of a sudden you get like this literally like a lucky break and things are changing. You know, I often think about that about my children. It's like, do I put on this like, you better go to Harvard, Yale hat, or do I just go the Scott Lee route and be like, you know, let's live life and let's see where it goes. How do we plan for our children's future as artists, as creative people who we know serendipity pops up in the future?
Ooh, that's a big question, man. You kind of lead them in the right direction, man. I mean, my daughter, she was like, I want to be a dancer, I want to be a gymnast, and I want to be kind of like what daddy's doing, an actor. I was like, yeah, honey, you know. And she's already in you know, she's in gymnastics class, and she's doing it, you know, weekly, and she's great at school. She has a lot of friends. She's very
sociable,
very very, and likable and funny. And so I mean, you just raise them well, raise them right, and then give them options, and then see what sticks for them, and just support. I'll support them. You know what I mean? I'll support them. She wants to be a gymnast, and she tries to go that route. dude, I'm like, hey, babe, you're strong as hell. You're like daddy. You're super strong. You're super confident when you're doing your stuff. Just go at it. And, or if she wants to be get into acting or directing or music, whatever, babe, just go. And then be you while you're doing it. And that becomes this one of a kind print that only you have. And then from there, try to expand and hopefully, become successful at it. So, but yeah, definitely go to college. Just, sometimes it's like, that's just an experience. I didn't do it though.
You didn't go to college?
I didn't go to college. No, I went after high school. I went to, I think I did like a junior high school, a junior college for a little bit. And then I worked at the police department. I wanted to be a cop because I'm always about protecting people. I'm very like a security guard person. I'm a security dad, and I always want to get the bad guy. And I think that's for me growing up. Like, I grew up in Rosemead, and it was some tough times back then. You know what I mean? We had drug dealers, gang members all, outside the house and shit. And so I stayed up late while my mom was sleeping just to kind of make sure. Because I could hear them from outside dealing and wheeling and shit. So I just kind of stayed up, just kind of like, make sure everything was okay. Even though I couldn't do shit. I was like fucking 10, dude. Something like that.
Did you hang out like at the coffee shops or the pool halls in
no, SUV? No. So that was like, I was like a youngster when that was happening.
Okay.
When all that stuff was going down.
Yeah. Cause if I was young, you were younger. Cause yeah. I remember being like one of the youngest kids hanging out at the pool halls when these guys were like 18, 20 year old dudes. But I was 15 tagging. Yeah. You must've been like 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Cause there was a big pool hall called International on, Rosemead and the 10.
Yeah.
And like a lot of shootings.
Stories, man. Yeah, I remember those stories, dude. I remember watching it on the news, hearing from my brother.
Was he a part of that scene?
No, he was a part of the the racing, like fixed up cars and stuff back in the days. That's a little crazy, bit,
yeah.
A little bit of that. Because he had friends from there and he had some friends from just crazy dudes that would go do stupid things too, man. Like not hurting people or anything, but just like they'll go to the cemetery at night and just fucking smoke, shit. And I wasn't like that. And then he brought some fucking shit back to the house, some spirits back to the house. And I was like, dude, my dad and I were like, you got to stop that shit right now.
Wait, we got to talk about that shit. Like, this is some real shit? This is
some shit. So he was going to a cemetery with his buddies and like...
Ouija board shit.
There's just like daring each other to do like, just high school senior guys, And he came back and they took his car and... he came home at night and then his girlfriend, he went into the house and his girlfriend walks up to a house, knocks on the door, goes inside and she sits and she's like, hey, Ron, who's in your car? Dude, there was no one. Nobody should be in the car, dude. So she saw somebody. She goes, I saw someone in the car as I was walking in. And so my brother got goosebumps he told my dad, and they both opened the front door and there was like a black cat sitting right there going, Rear! And then so my dad said, stay inside. He grabbed salt. He went outside, sprinkled the car with salt. I don't know what the heck that means though, but he sprinkled with salt and he was like, he said some shit, probably like, get the fuck out of here. Don't bother us. Blah, blah, blah. And that was kind of like one of those things, man. My brother was like, And his girlfriend doesn't like she's a straight up individual, right? So she was like, no, I saw somebody there. They were in your car. They were looking right at me as I was walking in. Yeah. So I don't play with that, man.
That's some crazy shit. I still struggle with that shit. I'm like, is it real? If it's not real, I still struggle with that. I was like a big Ouija board player.
Oh, man.
When I was a kid. Like around that age, 17, 18, 16, 17, I would go into a cemetery with one cousin or two cousins and I would put the Ouija board back of a truck, pickup truck. We put it right there, parked in the cemetery and we fucking go to town. I was a crazy motherfucker when it came to that.
Is that even does that it actually real, move? Man. Oh, that shit's man, real. Dude, don't fucking tap into that.
That shit's real.
Don't tap into that.
Yeah. I got crazy.
I'm getting goosebumps right now, man. Just thinking about this shit.
This is how crazy I was. I'm not proud of this. And I talk about this. I went to Arkansas when I was like 16, 15. I didn't have a driver's license at the time. I took two guys with me, my cousin and this church guy. He was like 19. And we drive to return this car in Oklahoma. And we pass by all these like small towns and they have these like small cemeteries. And we pull into a few of them and we walk around. And it's like eerie at night. And in one of them, it was like the sun was coming down and there was like this cemetery with like a lot of broken headstones. And there was one that was like cracked and I just kind of kicked it over and took the head tombstone back to LA with me in Arkansas so I can put the fucking Ouija board on. I just was not.
That's crazy, man.
I just was not in the right frame of mind in my teens because I was just like very daring. That's wild, and very dude. That's wild. Wild shit.
Yeah.
And I look back on that and I wonder, I'm like, it was a baby. It was like, you know, like tombstone? A 1 year old. Yeah, it was 1 year old. I'm like, damn, I wonder if that baby followed me around all these years and be like, I'm going to hold you back from life. I'm going to hold you back from, you know, like.
Probably not, dude.
Scary to think about.
Yeah.
But the, like the things that we do when we're kids, you know, it's like stupid, crazy
it
shit.
It is. That's where you need mentors, man. You need to just fucking pull a mentor in, whether it's a brother, your dad or uncle or like a coach or just like a older, like, like whether, you know, we're talking about acting and training and all that stuff, but like find someone who's been through it. And like if somebody was trying to like start hosting a podcast and knowing how, like the ins and outs of it, they need to call you, man. You know what I mean? And wouldn't you be like down to be like, hey,
totally.
Let me show you the ropes.
I try to get everybody to become a podcast host because we just need it. We just need more Vietnamese people doing this because we need amplification, right?
I could tell you like I knew this too at an early, like when I started acting too, I was like, I need to fucking find a mentor.
Wow.
And like years went by and I kind of forgot. And then I later on, I was like, damn, I need a mentor. And just like in jujitsu, wrestling, all that stuff that I did, I had a mentor, Larry Landless. And I remember I was at the gym I was training at and my buddy trained like Keanu Reeves, right? So one day he was there and I'm there and we were kind of rolling out and I was like, shit. My inner voice was like, go talk to him. Go talk to him, right? Because we kind of say hello and stuff, but go talk to him, right? And I didn't do it, right? And so at that moment, I was kind of like, oh, shit. You know, I could have like talked to him and like, you know, shoot the breeze a little bit, you know what I mean? But now, the way my mindset is like, dude, you see it.
You go.
Go. You don't wait, man. You don't wait to doubt yourself. You don't wait and then be like, oh, probably not. Oh, he's busy. Oh, she's busy. Ah, she probably saying, no, none of that bullshit. Like,
What do you think was the impetus for that switch? Because that doesn't happen to normal people. We, you know, normal people, we have this hesitation, this fucking built-in hesitation. Where somewhere along the fucking line, that got dropped. That got, that flame of like doubt got extinguished where you're now just like saying, whatever the fuck it is, I'm on the same playing field. I'm on the same playing level, right? Like, and the allowance that you give yourself to go and open up that portal, that's not normal. It's not. Mm. It doesn't exist in everybody. And I want to know
does it? And you just don't like the individual. Just like you know, our inner voice, right? I think we all have one. I don't know, right? I know I do. Where does it come from?
This is energy, right?
Does it come from my heart? Does it come from my brain? I don't think so. It's me, right? My, and I'm just thinking like you always got this battling.
Voices
like the devil and the angel, right? You know, back and forth, right? You know, for example, right? Oh, do it. No, don't do it. Ah, eat that. No, you shouldn't eat that shit. Fuck. Go work out. No, I'm too tired. My knees hurt and shit. When I was training people and I was training myself, I was like, use both. You know, they're going at it. Use both. They're both energy. Use both. And I think that's kind of like the way I was training.
What do you mean use both?
Like the word is not devil. Like, you know, I'm just saying because we're used to seeing the devil and the angel, right? But it's just two forces.
There's so, black and white.
Yeah. So the one that says don't do it. And then the one that says do it. Okay. So the one that, let's say the one that says don't do it. Right. What I'm training like Like, use him. Like tap into that voice, and that will energize you. That will motivate you. That will give you more
fuel
to do whatever you're going to do. You just got to tap into it.
The one that's telling you not to do it is, how do you reverse the energy?
I think energy. The way my mind was working was use the devil.
Yeah.
Like not necessarily the devil, obviously.
Use some negative force.
That negative force to push yourself to do it. Use this other force, push yourself to do it. Like, stop doubting yourself. Stop going back and forth and just go and do it. And just like, this is a good example, right? And use momentum. I do hot yoga. I used to do it a lot. I wish I knew about hot yoga when I was an athlete, when I was like training for shit, because it's so good for you. Your flexibility.
Just eat proteins and shit. Yeah.
Eat proteins. What?
Heat protein.
Oh, heat protein. Mm. I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that. But I know that it creates more flexibility in your skin, your muscles, your ligaments. It's very tough to stay in the class, you know. But once you're done with the class, you're like, damn, that felt so good. You feel detoxed and everything. But when you're doing it, when I was doing it, like I did it, I think yesterday, 2 days ago, or something like that, and I'm laying down. I think we're like almost over. I'm laying down. I put both my hands up to the ceiling. I'm laying down. I'm looking at and I wipe myself up. I drink like a gallon. I need to go to the bathroom soon, but I drink like a gallon of these a day. So as I'm in there, I'm sweating out like crazy, right? So I wipe myself up. I'm laying down and I wipe. And then I lay down and put my hands towards the ceiling. And my body starts beating. Like when I say beating, it means like little balls of sweat starts coming out. And I notice one bead on my wrist, and it starts to fall. And as it's going down, it's gathering other beads, and it's going faster, gaining momentum. Boom, 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 until it falls down, right? And then disappears, right? So, like, my analogy with that is basically, it's like momentum. Like build momentum. I created that ball, that bead of sweat. After that, I mean, it does what it does, whatever. But I created that. I created that little bead of sweat, and I can see how it's gaining other.
It's bringing other beads together.
Together to go faster and faster and faster. Momentum, man. So I think that's like, you know, little things like that. And you get it. You get a lot of this. Like, I get a lot of these moments, like, through training. When you train, whether it's like jiu-jitsu, wrestling, basketball, volleyball, swimming.
The more you marathon. Train.
Yeah, you start like finding these things that you could do it. You could do it, man. I could bench press fucking two wheels on each side. You know what I mean? But you got to like try it. You got to keep practicing at it.
Scott, thank you so much for your wisdom. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences. And I can't wait to see the film when it comes out.
Yeah.
And we can catch on Netflix or in the theaters or like
Netflix in April.
In April.
Yeah, A Tourist Guide to Love.
A Tourist Guide to Love.
To Love, yeah.
I can't wait.
Oh, man. It's going to be what a blessing it was.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And then, you know, we'll get you back on for the next project and the next one and the next one. This is going on for years.
Maybe I could bring some people with me,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, absolutely.
The cast, you know, I'd
love
that.
Yeah, we'd love that. So, and thanks for pushing this in-person thing today because it... You know, I am noticing the dynamics. I've never done this before in person, live. It's so much more, like I'm much more open to talk about like the craziest shit. It's just like weird. It's just like the energy is different than doing it through the screen.
Way different, man.
But we won't have a video version of this because, you know, I don't have the gear for it. But
well, next time, dude, next time start. I mean, and I think it's, put it out there because you're really good at what you do and you have great energy, man. And so you'll be helping and inspiring a lot of people, dude. Like, you don't even realize it, but you will. And then you'll be bringing in guests, and then you'll be like helping each other out too.
Yeah.
You'll be helping the guests too, you know what I mean? And it gives a place where like the younger, all race, but like Asians, you know, I kind of like seeing, oh, damn, he's fucking hosting this shit and he's bringing him and her on.
Yeah.
I want to be on that show one day. Just like when I was saying, I do it. I'm going to be in New York one day shooting an episode of blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? I had to see it. Like sometimes they don't see it. You know, you show them on the show, you bring out, artists or, you know, individuals that has been through it and what they learn, and then they could kind of like share their two pieces, you know what I mean, and how they got and some advice here and there. One last thing is that I always feel like when I'm on set, I'm on set right now for the HBO thing, but everyone that I come across, you know, especially like younger Asians or this time it was like a bunch of like people that I met like doing background. I talk to everybody, man. I come across people, I talk, and especially if, you know, I feel like, oh, this is good energy. We start talking and shit. And there's a lot of things that I've done that they don't know about. Like, they're trying to get into it. I've done background work, dude, I don't know how many years ago, dude. It was, I remember I did for like Nickelodeon or something like that. I did a bunch of stuff just because I wanted to see
what goes on set.
Yeah, I was like, okay, shit, so that's the lead girl, the lead guy, director there, camera there, and action, stay quiet. But I'm watching, you know? And so when I'm on set and I talk to like some of the other background actors and stuff, I'm like, hey, just, you know, da-da-da-da-da, and I'm like, hey, you can start out doing this and this and this. There's like commercial work. You have a great commercial look. You have a great print look, you know what I mean? And so that's a good place to start, you know. Instead of just, you know, you can take classes if you want, but, you know, find a commercial agent, find a print agent, and from there start building up and knowing what you're gonna do, and then do short films and stuff, and write some shit, you know. Just kind of keep yourself in the mix, and then and I was like, hey man, pass it over to me. I'll pass it over to the people I know.
Yeah.
I don't hesitate on that. If I feel like, again, like the wavelength of,
yeah,
they want to learn and they want to get better, dude. And people, like, I know people that will kind of like vouch for me. They're like, hey man, dude, I say that all the time and I mean it. Like, pass it over to me and I'll pass it over to this person I know. You know, it doesn't bother me at all. But don't wait. I tell them, don't wait too long, because while the skill is hot, because shit happens. You know, if you want it, and I'm saying, hey, I'll pass it over. Of course, dude. Do it soon. Don't wait. There's a couple of people that it's been like 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I said, hey, pass it over to me. I know this casting director that said his agent friend knows, is trying to build up his roster and he's looking for people. I'll pass it over. Been a couple of weeks. I haven't gotten shit. You know what I mean? So.
Well, thank you again, Scott. Again, much appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. The Vietnamese is produced by Brittany Tran. Special thanks to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast. You can also find us on YouTube, where you can subscribe, like, and comment. Please rate and give us a review wherever you find our podcast.